Greetings again, friends and brethren, and welcome again to God's Feast of Tabernacles 2008. This will be the first recorded message that will go on the website. Before I begin the offertory, there are a couple of brief announcements that I forgot to give last night on opening night. I apologize for that. First thing is, you might be wondering where the closest restroom is for this meeting hall. Just go right out our door, go to the left, right around the end of this room, you take another left. And you'll see the signs down there that say restrooms. Ladies come first, and then the men just pass that. Be careful as you approach those restrooms because the sidewalk goes at a slant a little bit, and it's like slip tile. And I just tested it a few minutes ago, and you can fall if you're unstable like me. So the restrooms are right out to the left and to the left again. Again, a reminder, between services today, we have a lunch at Captain Jack's buffet. And for any of you that missed the directions last night, we could try to follow some of each other that are going there, but if not, you simply go out our parking lot, take a right, and you head east, and you go down, it's not too far, a quarter mile, maybe further, you'll see a Waffle House first in an intersection just past that. That's Thomas Drive. You take a right, you'll be hugging the beach, and you go like another quarter or half mile on Thomas Drive, and you'll see a sign on the left saying Captain Jack's Buffet. And so we'll all meet there as soon as we can after services. And then this afternoon, depending on the schedule, and everyone is back, has a little time to rest, we had originally scheduled the services for 3 o'clock, but if everyone is back and anxious to start, we can start as early as 2:30. If everyone is here, if not, we'll start at 3. Another reminder, tomorrow, in Panama City Beach, the water department will be turning off the water in our area beginning at 9 a.m. So just be aware of that, so you won't be caught in the shower at 9 o'clock with no water. It's only going to be off for 4 hours tomorrow for city maintenance, but just to be forewarned. Okay, that's it for the announcements. Now to get into the offertory message, I just want to really, on this first offertory, cover a few basic scriptures for the benefit of those that are new and with us, and also by way of reminder for those of us who have been around for years, but it's God's way of teaching is by repetition, year to year. So I want to go over a couple of basic scriptures, and on the last great day, there will be a different set of scriptures covered, and probably tie it into more where we are here in the end time. So to begin with, please turn to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16, and this whole chapter covers, you can read it all on your own, but it's an overview of God's commandments to keep these holy days, to keep his holy days throughout the year. But beginning in verse 16, here's a generalization of the time periods that God commands offerings. In verse 16, he says, 3 times a year, all of your males shall appear before the Eternal, your God, in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. So, pause from reading here. There's 3 main seasons throughout the year, which is spring, summer, and fall, that God commands us to come together. In ancient Israel, it was they gave different offerings by fire and all that, but today we use monetary method because that's the way our society is geared. So those 3 seasons, as Mr. Armstrong made clear many years ago, and through these scriptures you'll see in those 3 seasons, there are 7 annual holy days during those 3 periods. And those are the 7 times in a year that God commands us to give an offering. And this is above and beyond our regular tithes, and in separate from that. So those periods are the first day of unleavened bread in the spring and the last day of unleavened bread, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and then the last great day. This is the 8th day following this week, which is a separate feast altogether. And as I was telling someone this morning, that's really my favorite, I think, feast day of all because of what it represents and God's plan. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful time when he brings all those that have ever lived up out of the ground. And for the first time, they'll have their eyes open. And all those people that we've known in and out of our families and over the many generations and years in our life that have died not knowing the truth, they'll have that opportunity. And what a wonderful plan God has. And it's all done in a time order. So those are the 7 days that God does require us to give offerings. Notice in Leviticus chapter 23, briefly, Leviticus chapter 23, and beginning in verse 34, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the eternal." So that's where we are today, on that first day. Verse 35, "On the first day there shall be a holy convocation," and here we are, see, "you shall do no customary work on it. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the eternal." Now, see, in ancient Israel, they did. That's what they did. They offered for all 7 days. But today we do it only on the first day because it's the first day that's the holy day. And it goes on to say, "On the eighth day," and that eighth day is the last great day, "on the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation." So see, we see the commandment for that holy convocation on that eighth day, or the last great day. "And you shall offer an offering," so there's a commandment for that day, the last great day, "made by fire unto the eternal, is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it." So on the first day of the feast and on the last great day, or holy days, that we do no customary work on. In verse 37 says, "These are the feast of the eternal." See, these are not Jewish feasts, as many in the world would accuse us of keeping. They're not Jewish feasts. God says, "These are my feasts, feast of the eternal." That's whose feast they are. So all mankind is commanded to keep these. They just don't know it yet, or they're not yet aware of it. But they will be in time. "These are the feast of the eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the eternal, a burnt offering and a grain offering and a sacrifice and drink offering." So see, today we don't do all those various offerings. Those were symbolic for ancient Israel to teach them obedience to God's law. Today it's just a simple monetary offering. 38 says, "Besides the Sabbaths of the eternal, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, and besides all the freewill offerings." So these are offerings on these holy days that are above and beyond all the other offerings and your tithes. And so let's go now to the New Testament, and we'll notice something about what our attitude should be when we, not only when we tithe, but when we give offerings. Now remember what I read there in verse 16 and 17, God commands of Deuteronomy 16. He says, "Every man should give as he is able." So no one's required to give what you aren't able to give. God never requires that, only what you are able to give, and only you can determine that. But notice 2 Corinthians, the amount is irrelevant. It's between you and God. Now, many televangelists out there in the world today would have you think otherwise. You know, you've got to give all you can give. But really, between you and God, and he says, give as you're able. But what matters is your attitude when you give. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, notice beginning in verse 5, Paul says, "Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren." See, who's that? That's the church, see? "To exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity," notice this, "and not as a grudging obligation." See, or as the Old King James says, a covetous obligation. So when we prepare our offerings, or even when we do our tithes on a regular basis, hopefully none of us will ever have the mindset or attitude is that, yeah, here I go, I have to tithe again. I have to, because God tells me to, I have to do it. No, our attitude should be, I want to tithe, because it is part of keeping God's law, and we should have an attitude of joy in that. We should joyfully tithe. And when you do that, with that attitude, that's when the blessing comes. Because if our attitude is that it's just an obligation that I have to fulfill, we'll never be blessed as a result. If we're just fulfilling our obligation and that's it, we will never be blessed. We'll never learn the lesson of giving, God's give way of life. So this is a good example here. As Paul says, it should be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation. So hopefully that's what our attitude is. But let's go on and look at verse 6. "But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully." Notice verse 7. "So, see, therefore, let each one give as he purposes in his heart." See, I can't tell you. Only it's between you and God. And you know what you're able to give. Don't ever give what you're not able to give. God doesn't expect us to live in a pauper state because we give everything we have to the church. That's not what he requires. So let each give one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly, not grudgingly or of necessity. So we don't want to have the attitude of where it says necessity. The old King James or some other translation says compulsion. You don't want to give because you're compelled to do so or because or grudgingly. But listen to the last of that verse, because God loves a cheerful giver. That's what our attitude should be, with love and with joy, and with and just knowing not only that we're required to do it, but if we have the attitude of doing it joyfully, just like keeping the rest of God's laws, then we'll be blessed. But notice verse 8, God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you always, having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. Now, dropping down to he continues with this thought, but for sake of time, notice verse 12. It says, for the, he's talking about these offerings. It says, for the administration of this service, not only this supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. So one of the things that the church has traditionally always done with funds is to help those saints that are in need. And that's what we do today. And a lot of our church funds, it goes for advertising of the world of the website, and that costs hundreds of dollars a month, quite a bit actually. And as we're able, I try to bump up and increase the advertising and the budget, and then any excess funds stay in that church account, and then we do help with those who need help. Is there someone out there?
I think there is.
Okay. But notice this thought in verse 12, where it says, for the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but, and so hold your finger there, or actually we're really done there, and turn back to Deuteronomy 15, and we'll see a similar principle there. We're just talking about the needs of the saints or brethren. Deuteronomy 15. See, I'm in the wrong chapter here. And notice verse 7. It says, if there is among you a poor man of what? Your brethren. See? Of our family, spiritual or physical family, if there's among you a poor man of your brethren within any of the gates of your land, which the Eternal your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother. But you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. So that's what we do today with excess funds. And then there are some that, when our third tithe year comes around and people send in their third tithes and it's marked for that, that is set aside for that purpose, for helping those. And we do have several, for example, widows in the church, physically and spiritually. Widows, so we do help when we're able to. We don't have a lot of money, but we help as and when we're able. And for the last couple of years, for example, we've been blessed, and we try to set a little bit aside to where, like on the first and last holy day, the church is able to buy all of our lunch for that day with excess funds. So that's been a wonderful blessing as well. But we do try to follow God's example here of reaching out and opening up wide to help as much as we can. And we're not able to do as much as we'd like to, but we do what we can. So that's basically how I want to cover it in this first offertory. Before we take up the offering, does everyone have an offering envelope? If not, Mr. Cotton Hester, looks like Ray needs one back there. If you're just making a check out, just make it the Church of God. If you're putting cash, you're using cash, please, you don't have to put the amount on the, your name on, don't put the amount on the envelope, just put your name on the envelope if you're giving cash only, because it'll be on a check automatically. And this is so I can keep it in our ledger for the sake of, hopefully, by the end of the year, we'll have our 501(c) tax exempt status. If that's the case, then all your tithes and offerings for the year will be retroactive, tax exempt to January 1st of 08. So hopefully, I've got to do some finishing up on that when we get back from the feast and get it submitted to the IRS. There's a tremendous amount of writing I have to do, just in addition to a 28-page application, plus was telling my brother, it's kind of ironic. You have to send a sizable check in with the application just so you could become tax exempt. So they're going to get money from you even before you become tax exempt. That's our government. But anyway, again, if you're just putting cash in the envelope, don't put the amount. Just put your name on the back of the envelope so I can keep track of it. That way, I put it on our ledger when we get back. And that's basically it. So, Mr. Cotton Hester will start in a few moments. But first, we'll have offertory music, and that'll end this message as far as recording for the website.